system, and this is kind of a summary thing of what's been done, what's probably going to happen, and what's in now. First, my only place with my contact information is the lower right corner. So that's my email. If you have any specific questions after this, you can see it. It's kaib@google.com. So enable jam is obviously configure switch. First, a few words why we are interested in doing this. There's been talk about barriers to entry and so forth. I think it's part of this more bigger topic of sustainable development. OpenOffice has been around for quite a few years, as some of you might know, and it's probably going to be around for quite a few more years even after this. One of the critical things with a project of this scale is obviously to keep the development momentum going. We want to be able to go forward, do changes. Marketplace is going to be different in 5 years, hopefully. It's already different now than when the project started. We want to be able to adapt to new situations, to be able to continue development at the same pace as always. Matthias had some good stuff about the architecture yesterday, and talking about how fast it was to deploy pieces into the existing C++ architecture. We want to keep that kind of rapid thing. We want people to come to OpenOffice and be like, what? I've been specifically focusing on new developers, lowering the barrier of entry for new developers. There are a few reasons for it. Obviously, the first one is that we like more developers to join. We don't have, compared to the amount of, especially corporate developers, we don't have too many hobbyist developers. We'd like more of them to contribute, at least at some level. And that said, we want even more corporate developers, obviously. New developers also, they usually tend to be canaries. You probably know that in coal mine, the air might not be very good. And to a very classical method to monitor the air quality is to have a canary with you. And when a canary dies, then you know you have to kind of, you know, start looking for the exit. And new developers are kind of canaries. They're small, they may start making some sound, and when they stop making the sound, then you know that they've gone away, and you need to start to worry about it. We have a lot of canaries that gone dead in OpenOffice. Somebody turns up on the mailing list, or an IRC, that's even better. They turn up on the IRC, you walk them through the build steps, and then you're like, oh, finally the build is going. Then you go, wow, excellent. And you say, okay, wait a few minutes, just a few minutes, so you see it's actually, you know, started. And then they go, okay, it looks good. And then they ask you, can I go and fetch a coffee while it's building? You know, do I have time to go to the kitchen and do some coffee? And you're like, and then you tell them, obviously, well, you might have to wait slightly longer. And then you see Nick has disconnected. And obviously, dead canaries is something we want to pay attention to. So, sustainable development. I don't know if you can see, this is actually a nice blue-looking sea star, I think. And talking about barriers of entry, this is actually the Great Barrier Reef, so this is the big barrier of entry. The reason I picked this one, this is actually the cover of a book called, I think, Sustainable Development, not surprisingly. A coral reef looks it looks like rock most of the time, but as most of you probably know, it's all of those small things are actually living organisms, not plants, but animals, more or less. So we're kind of like that, we're a small coral whatever in the big piece of coral things. Anyway, so I wanted to imagine to myself what our build system is like. And then I thought the CCR is probably the best example. This is like a car tells a lot about what the build system should do. We want to get places, right? We stand here, we have the code, and then we want to get to somewhere else. And the build system, in a way, that's the way for us to get somewhere else. The CCR is the fastest street car in the world. For those of you who follow Top Gear, in the United Kingdom, it's a streetcar that's, if I know correctly, it's currently leading the Top Gear. They have this really hard test track, and it's the fastest car on the test track. It's done by a small company in Sweden. It obviously costs tons of money, And they can only manufacture so many cars per year. It's a very small, limited edition series, but it's a very fast car. It's and what they've done is basically they've focused exclusively on speed. That's their thing. So this is kind of how our build system should look like. And my main purpose with the presentation is to kind of show you this is why it should look like, or why it should look like this. It can look like this, and basically it will look like this with a bit of work. So imagine, close your eyes for a second, this is our build system. You sit there. So that's the kind of feeling you want to have. So let's go in slightly more detail and see what it actually means to have a CCR. The question is, there is one difference. We get to that later. But the CCR and our build system have one difference. Good point. Okay, so obviously the first thing we need to talk about is raw build speed. Raw build speed here means basically when you get the source code, you start build all, how long does it take until you pop out the other end? The first thing I want to say, all these numbers are manufactured. We've done several tests over the years, during this year, and we have a ton of data. Most of it is posted in tools. But the problem is, just pushing all the data on you would just make you go gaga. It at least makes me go gaga. So I composed a graph that gives a guideline of how it works. Obviously, also, all the numbers are different, all the platforms. So this is on one specific machine, my machine more specifically. And this is a Windows 32 build. The starting point is 17 hours in February this year. So obviously on a single machine that's a bit too long. People tell me this is optimistic on Windows, and I tell them I have a really fast machine. So I heard reports of up to 30 hours. I heard reports Linux builds are usually significantly faster. We'll get to that in a second. The three first bars represent things that are more or less done. More or less means that in case, for example, as changing from PC shell to bash, that's already in development milestones. The GUV hack, I think it's in, or then it's in the next milestone. Yeah. Basically, here we changed shell, and it improved the build speed quite significantly. We Volker rewrote GUV, which is a thing that mangles Sigmund paths, the Windows paths. It was written in Perl and was called millions of times. He wrote it in C, and well, quite an improvement. DMake improvement is basically, Matthias just gave me some numbers the day before. It was something like 450,000 processes for 15,000, 11,000 source files. And a huge bunch of those processes spawned were bash instances. And a huge bunch of those bash instances had a single command called echo. So Volker basically made an echo in DMake that's built in. So instead of calling bash that calls echo that calls whatever, we call the system function directly. So a huge speed up there as well. These changes are not done by me. Thank you specifically to Ause, Volker, Quetsche, who's the DMake maintainer, and Heiner. You guys who work in Sachsenfeld, once you get back there, walk to their office and say, thank you, the developers of OpenOffice are happy. Because obviously they're not here and they need to get the feedback. So, these four first ones are basically removing Sigmund suckage. Linux builds are more or less on the first green spot. So Linux builds are already much faster because they have less interaction between the Unix layer we use, Sigmund, and the underlying operating system. So this doesn't actually benefit anybody else except those poor souls who need to build a Windows, which sadly is too many. When we get here, we start talking about changes that actually affect all builds, not just Windows builds. So you can think of Windows getting at par with Linux, and then we go forward, we're going to get stuff that's going to improve everything. The first one is make depend. One of the things we realized pretty soon was that we spend a huge amount of time generating dependency information for the build. This turned out to be unnecessary. We could instead, basically we were calling makedepend for every single source file. And makedepend is designed to be called on a batch of source files because then it caches a lot of information between the source files. And obviously we were rebuilding cache, throwing it away, rebuilding the cache again for the next file, throwing it away. So just compounding a huge block of makedepend calls to generate the dependency information was good. We found out this because the Jam prototype basically generated dependencies in seconds instead of spending hours on it. And there was a small light going up, like we might be able to improve on this, right? So makedepend is something Heiner has been working on. I'm not sure if it's in yet. I don't think it's in, but it definitely should be in pretty soon. These are kind of the most easy load-having fruit, the first ones. Once we go forward, we start talking about more complex optimizations. The next big dip is precompiled headers. What this basically means is that when you compile C++, a lot of the time the compiler includes the same files over and over and over again. Almost all C++ files in some include maybe 10 or 20 of the most common operating system headers. And the C++ compiler ends up parsing them again and again and again and again. The idea with precompiled headers is to do that parsing once, store the intermediate tree, output tree, that the compiler uses internally, store it in binary form in disk, and whenever you compile a new C++ file, you just grab this precompiled piece, load it directly, and use it for compilation. The speed up is somewhere between 3 to 4 times on raw compiles. I think, I'm trying to be conservative here, I think we should be able to just double the speed with precompiled headers. This is, at the current point, this is in, there's one tiny little but with precompiled headers. You need to modify every C++ file in the project. That's been done, and pchfix02, which is a tiny workspace that includes all the modules of OpenOffice, more or less, is currently, it's past QA and it's in Martin's court to be upstreamed at some point. We basically also has been working to backport the precompiled headers were originally done in the Jam prototype. Also has been working on backporting into the build.pl DMX system, and he has had a working version as of last week, I think. So there's hope of actually getting this precompiled headers in sooner rather than later. Now we get to the small blue tabs. This is stuff that's under works, and it's definitely not in production yet. In the first one, going to Jam. Jam is a prototype build system. It's basically a make type tool that you can use to build projects. It's been used to test all this stuff, and it would give us a small speed up in the overall build. There's one little but. We basically need to transform all the existing build files from the existing build system into Jam files to make this work. I'll go into it later, but you see, the dip isn't too big. That's not really a huge improvement for the raw build speed. When we go forward, to really improve on a few hours of compilation time, the CPU speeds, as was talked yesterday with Stefan, aren't really improving. So what we need to do, we need to be able to blow out the compile to several computers and do it distributedly. The fastest this CC speed I know, actually it's ice cream, I'm sorry, it's ice cream speed, was reported by Candy from Novell. He says that he has a cluster of these really evil observer machines, and he's able to do a Linux compile of OpenOffice in 47 minutes, single language, mind you. But still, that's a pretty good one. A cluster compile, I think we can even optimize on that. Currently, the fastest distributed build is the internal Sun build, and it currently is a module level build. So it builds one module, waits, builds the next one, waits, and so forth. We could probably exploit parallelism even more, because C++ can of course be compiled in parallel. we don't need to wait for linking to be able to start compilation on our modules. So instead of waiting for linking and keeping the linking as a gap, we could just spread it out even more. 20 minutes is a guess. I think we should be able to get down to 20 minutes of OpenOffice compilation based on a cluster. But this is definitely not going to be in today, or even tomorrow for that
matter. 20 minutes for the full bin?
Yes. I mean, Candy does it in 47 minutes, so I don't think it's too much of a stretch. The question is how much we can distribute. So, the more interesting part is the raw build speed up, obviously something we need to fix. That's the pretty, you know, baseline thing. However, the no change build is basically probably more important for developers. No change basically means once you build OpenOffice, OpenOffice turns true, builds, and then you type the same build command again. How long does it take for OpenOffice or the build system to get back and say, hey, there's nothing to do? The first red one, I had some issues when I was doing this slide. The problem is that you can probably see that the first red one is that's according to the instructions. This is how you're supposed to do it. The problem is it's hitting the ceiling. Actually, the first red one, if you took it from here, it would go back all the way to the back of the wall, and obviously the next ones wouldn't look so good, so I had to break it up. This is basically times from Ause's machines. Ause, fun build engineer. If you go to inset o native and type build all, build dash dash all, and then wait, and then type build dash dash all again, it takes 3 hours and 20 minutes on his machine to come back and say, yeah, we actually done everything already. The sad part is this is the way we recommend for new users to do it. We say to new users, build in root, type dmake in the root, that builds OpenOffice. And then we say something cryptic about build PL and so forth. This is probably a better way to do it. I don't think it's documented anywhere. Matthias told me yesterday that he's actually building in post-process. That's probably the right way to do it. You should be building in post-process because post-process basically depends on post-process module depends on everything else, and in the install sets depend on post-process. Most of the time the install set is spent doing the install sets again, even if they actually don't need to be changed. So post-process is probably the correct one. Matthias had a timing of 7 minutes. I put it to 30 minutes because I think Ause's machine is slightly slower than...
Some order of magnitude.
Some order of magnitude, yeah. But this gives kind of an idea where we are. So we could say that for external developers, this is like the no-change build, building in post-process. It doesn't actually help you. You need to do some hacking, especially on Windows. You need to have a script to actually copy the stuff to where you install it, some, you know, small tweaky stuff like that. But I can imagine by improving documentation, we could get it down to this. Then we wanted to see how fast we could go. So we did a test harness that basically, it's a script that generates C++ files. It generates roughly the same amount of C++ files that OpenOffice has. And then it inserts fake dependencies between these C++ files. So we have and then we tweak the dependency generation, so we get about as much dependencies as OpenOffice has. Then we ran different make tools on this test harness to see, we wanted to get a baseline. How fast could we actually get it? If we had all the dependency information, if we just did the fastest thing possible, what's the like bottom, rock bottom we could hit? We had several tools represented. One of them was GNU-make, but it turns out GNU-make is dog slow on Windows. And we already had DMake, so that wasn't really an option. We also tried scons and so forth. But in the end, we ended up with three make tools. They're called Developer, DMake, and Jam. The Developer tool produces in about 3 minutes. The Developer tool is very interesting. It's a good, very good build tool. It basically means that the developer loads the dependency information into their brain, and some of you saw Michael Bemmer's graph, so it's quite trivial, you know. And then they load the dependency information into their head, and then they calculate the dependency inside their head, and then they enter individual DMake or build directories and type DMake there in some magical way. And the result is, it's really quick. Usually when you talk to old-time developers saying that the build is really, it's fast, it's good. This is what they're talking about. It has one slight drawback. Usually most people take 5 to 10 years to pick it up. It's not too bad. Obviously, it's a very working system. And I think it's definitely, if you look at the improvement you get from post-process, I think it's definitely a good system. But obviously, it probably doesn't scale on the human level. Then we tested two other tools, DMake and Jam. And I'm sorry for those in the back, but you probably can't see the things. They're pretty small. DMake basically did this work. Here we're talking a single DMake file that included all the dependencies. DMake took 57 seconds to say no changes, and Jam took 7 seconds to say no changes. So if you say that basically 7 is the real baseline we can get to, we're talking a slight improvement from the existing situation. The big question is, why is this important? New developers usually, what they do is they take the source code, most of the time, and then they break things. And then they see how the breakage affects the program. They're like, oh, breaking that actually, you know, turns off that menu. And then they might, if they've been breaking it long enough, they at some point they start adding pieces to the code. This breaking depends on feedback. You break something, and you need feedback as quick as possible to see what you actually broke. It's like old time, you know, medicine. You cut up the person to see when they fail. So what do you want to do? You want to make this loop as fast as possible. You want to you know, you should let them burn their hand safely and quickly as many times as possible, you know, in a quick succession. The reason why the developer system, the main drawback with the developer make system is mainly that it's very hard to be certain that you actually have calculated all dependencies. You might end up in a situation where you thought you did all dependencies, you build, your stuff works, and then somebody else takes your child workspace, does a full build, and bang, you're screwed because you actually didn't build everything, and there was some dependency you missed, and the resulting binary didn't work, so you actually have a mixed system of different levels. We want to make this so it works more easily. So, that's where we started. This is where we can get with documentation changes. I think we could get tweaking the existing build system here, and then we could probably get downstairs by moving over the existing system to something new. The thing with the DMake is we use DMake already, so the one thought was to why not improve the existing system using the DMake build. The problem is we use DMake in a way that we call DMake once for every single source directory, and the symbols are global, so if you combine two of these make files into source directories, the symbols will collide. And if you combine 1,000 of them, the symbols really collide. And there's unrolls, for example, for lib. So there's lib1, lib2, lib3. These unrolls are actually manually specified in the make files. So we have in SLO Inc, we have manually, or it's actually a script, but you have textually unrolled pieces of the build stuff. So if you wanted to have, say, 100 SLO targets, you needed 100 textually unrolled SLO targets, which would take a huge time to read. So if we want to get to those blue ones down there, we need to go through a process of changing at least pieces of the build system. So, I'm definitely not on time. So, this is Clueless, a newbie. There are new developers and they're so ready to build OpenOffice. We want to make this experience safe for them. The big thing is again, with the developer make, or any other make tool or build system we currently have to actually get the build fast, is that they do something and they're not going to get the feedback immediately. We want them to survive this, that's good, and then we want them to not be killed on their way out. That's the basic thing. So in the end, what we need to, I think there's two schools of thought in terms of making things. I used to do some aviation stuff, and we had this regulation for how to do things. There was a lot of guidelines for how to insert things. And usually when you had a piece of equipment, it was usually designed so you could only insert it one way. You could try 10 other ways, but it didn't work. It looked obviously wrong. You tried to insert it the wrong way, and it looked like it's sticking out. It didn't look good. And then you found the correct way. It just went in. And every time I talked with some old-time pilot, they always pointed like, this rule was this guy in 87 who broke his leg. And I'm like, oh, cool. So that's why you added that rule. And then they go, the second rule was this other guy in 92 who broke his head. That wasn't good. And then they walk me through the rules and tell me that every one of these is somebody who actually broke a piece of their body, more or less. So we want to avoid it. We don't, if we find that inserting a piece, you can insert the piece in two ways, we want to fix it. We want to make it so we can only insert it in one way, and that way is the correct way, obviously. So preferably, we'd like a single interface to the build system. We'd like a single thing, build OpenOffice, and then it should do the right thing. That's what Clueless and Newbie are expecting from us. Crash course in Java, talking about the last slide. I'm just going to go quickly through. We've been prototyping this for a while. There's a child workspace, Jam 01, that basically builds the calc module using Jam. It's integrated currently with BuildPL, so it uses Jam as a primer, which means that the BuildPL comes to calc, it looks like, okay, here's a Jam file, it calls Jam on calc, Jam builds as far as it can, because Jam currently doesn't cover all targets, and when it's ready, when it gives up, okay, this is as far as I can go, the BuildPL system takes over and builds everything completely. So you can just, if you do configure, you can just --- enable Jam when you configure, and you get a magic speed boost when you're building calc. There's about half the targets supported, in terms of total coverage. The good part, we're supporting maybe 95% of the time. So we're already supporting compilation and stuff like that takes huge amounts of time. So if you do a build PL in calc using the primer, it takes something like, my machine, 9 minutes to do the Jam part and a half minute to do the build PL part. So we're pretty well. Jam is a very simple thing. It's slightly more complex than pure make. It has simple flow control, a bit more than make, slightly more expressive dependencies. So it's a little bit more procedural language than pure make files. But then we don't use pure make files, we use make plus shell, which obviously is much more complex than pure make. So it's simpler, you can do less things with Jam than you could currently do in the make file. You can't do this shell invocation magic stuff, but you can do more than in pure make file. We'll get to that in a second. This is just, it's a very simple language, basically. It's all tailored for building. On the right, or on the left side, that's the Apollo Lunar Lander source code. And on the right side, obviously, is a part of the Hamburg U-Bahn map. To make this work easier, we have a few pieces of script to convert existing makefile .mks to Jam files. So currently the coverage is somewhere between 80 and 90%, so there's still some manual work required, but a lot of files just come in the script, a Jam file is pushed out, and so forth. This is basically how it looks. A lot of this compression is because we look at the file list and then we use a glob instead of listing the files explicitly. And the glob is built so we have ignore patterns of the glob. So it looks at all the files in the directory, all the files here, and builds a glob expression that covers specifically those files. We also cut out various pieces that were support for 16-bit Windows and other interesting targets. And we just, it's a cleanup utility at the same time as it transformed to a Jam file. This on right hand is the old thing, on the left hand is the new thing. I need one of those cool things that the Sun people have. This is basically how it looks. So it looks pretty similar to how the makefiles are done today. This is basically SLO files, what you would use. It's called CXS file because it lists source instead, but that's more or less the same thing. So you have glob that actually looks in this, picks up all the CXS files in this directory. Again, this is from calc source core tool, and this is an actual makefile from the system, except I cleaned up the GNU header. Here we set some specific flags for this module needs some specific flags to be able to compile. So we set set CXS flag on SC tool. This is a meta target that means this specific directory. So we can kind of set, this is a namespacing mechanism in a sense. So we basically do the same thing we do in makefile.mk, except we're able to namespace these SLO files or CXS files declarations. So this is kind of what we like to do with the DMake files anyway. Exception files, this should be standard for anyone who has actually worked on makefiles. Specific OS situations, Linux Power PC, Linux DC, this is Spark. We need to not optimize some stuff. This is all pretty standard things you see in Mock makefile. The only difference is this on SC tool to specify the module, and the if statement is slightly different. And this just ties it together and says, do this, make a library, I'm happy. So from the end user perspective, for people actually writing makefiles, it's not a huge step in terms of actually working with the stuff.
Question, what does SC-tool mean?
It's a SC-tool. Currently, it's basically a meta target, or what's it called, make a fake target. So it's currently namespacing works, so we have the first part is for the module, and then we basically take the source directories. And so this is basically SC, it's the source core tool. So we say SC tool is the second. So we only have two levels of namespacing. So it's the module and then sub piece of that module, basically.
But it's not related to the first line, is which sub your top SC source core tool.
It's not
related to that.
It is, yeah. The first rule actually, this is just a generic header to tell us in what directory we are. We just need to add this to get all the settings correct in this piece. So it's a declaration. We are currently in this file resides in this directory. So we go there. But obviously it's related, right? So a tool is just one piece of code. Sure? Did I really answer the question?
Well, yes.
Okay, so there's namespacing with the first part being module and the second part being a subpiece of the module. And it's basically arbitrary. Well, I tried with three levels deep and it seemed too complex, so two levels deep seemed enough of namespacing. But it's basically just a namespace target or namespace name. So, what's the difference between the CCR and the build system? You have plenty of time to think about it now. How many of you have driven the CCR?
No.
How many of you have used the build system? Ah, oh, come on, there. Backbencher. The difference is obviously that not many of us have driven the CCR, even if it might have been fun. We keep having like CCR open office conference, but every one of us has used the build system. So we're all in the coal mines, right? This is important for a few things. Usually when you do business decisions or any decisions basically, you need to calculate, is this work worth doing? If you make a 1 second improvement on something that takes 2 hours, but you only do it once in your life, it might, you know, not be worth spending a year on, right? So the question is, what kind of numbers are we talking about? How much time can you spend on the build system for what type of improvements? If we take the net present value of saving 1 minute of developer time every workday, so not Sundays and Saturdays, but every time a developer comes into their office and works, not, you know, summer vacation and so forth, and we're able to save them 1 minute of work time on average, it's worth a developer year to spend on. It's actually worth 1.5 developer years to spend on. We want to make some profit, right? So we're still going to be ahead if we spend 1 year just getting a minute. Translated to newbies, usually a conversion rate in almost all industries is somewhere between 1% and 5%. So you have 100 people trying, and you end up with maybe one or five, between one and five people actually using the product. This is mostly true for all the kind of mail order stuff comes in. I assume it's pretty close for open source projects as well. Saving 1 minute is somewhere in the line of, I think, was saving 10 newbies actually get through the process. Because newbies have it so much harder, they spend so much more time with actually trying to build, if we can shave off one day of that process, we already are hugely ahead. So hacking this stuff, getting even those final optimizations at the end, it's still almost always worth it. This is something we want to push really to the extreme. This is something we need to be like the CCR. We really need it to be a super fast thing that does the thing, does what we want really well. So there's plenty of scope for improvement even after these changes go. Ah, so what can you do? I wanted to originally to call for action to test the build prototype. I don't think it's ready for public consumption yet. We've been talking of probably pushing it out to the build bots first. You can try out Jamo 1, which is the child workspace that includes it. The thing you can do as an experienced developer is start by cleaning up the main filter for your module. If you're a calc developer, that's already been done for you. Thank you.
Thanks.
All other people, you need to do this. This basically means go through the main files you have, look if you do shell invocations. Take out those shell invocations, put them in a script or something, and instead call the script externally. Try to make the main files as clean as possible. This doesn't actually only affect... If you do this, you're still going to have everybody's, you know, thanked for going through this stuff. We need to do it anyway. But it makes it easier for the automatic script to actually translate these files into jam files. A second thing, which is a big thing, fix your include statements. Look through what you're including and check that you're actually including only what you need. And then, especially in headers, look if you can replace them with declarations if you only use a pointer, etc. Thorsten is probably going to talk more about this today. Yes? Go to Thorsten's talk. Thorsten's talk is good. To be honest, this in the long run, this is the only way to really speed up the build. We need to work, like Michael Bemmer showed the thing with the million of dependencies, we need to chop down on this. That affects the build. And we're all part of it. Everybody is responsible. The build isn't something that some person like me or also Heiner does. The build speed and the build responsiveness and build everything with the build, you're all responsible for it. You're the guys who actually make the hard work to make it fast, make it snappy, make it usable. Read up on Perforce Jam and it says that DevOps tools. So Google Perforce Jam and you're gonna find a man page and some documentation of Jam. Read up on that, post on tools, what do you think about the thing, etc. Comments, reviews, etc. We need to be sure that we're picking the right tools. We need to be sure that we actually can use them. Help add test new targets on platforms YAML 1. If you're really hardcore, you've done all the previous stuff, you cleaned up half of OpenOffice already, come on, join YAML 1. Currently, we need to add, there's some more esoteric targets like Solaris we need to add. And then we obviously need to start adding more pieces of the build system. And then, in general, give feedback. Stuff like this depends on a quick resolution of problems. And if nobody knows what the problems are, they can't be resolved, right? So you're supposed to test things, throw it against the wall, kick the tires, and then say, this doesn't work, and that's because why. And then somebody can go like, and fix the thing. So give feedback, test the stuff, and that's it. It was a crash test, obviously. Oh, and the final slide. Fishes. So, questions and discussion. Martin had some questions he promised he would ask, so the floor is yours. Come on!
So,
Matthias first.
Yes, it seems that you think that what you call the developer tool doesn't work for newbies. I tend to agree, but I think even if you make the build system very fast, do you really think you should consider that nobody has such powerful machines that you can get a benefit from parallel builds? So I would assume that most developers that, for example, work in their spare time or so just have a computer where they can achieve the build speed that you have with the fastest possible build today. Maybe
okay.
A little bit optimized by the optimizations of the main tools. So if they work on a special module change something, usually I would say they should get some help that they don't have to do it all. And so the question is that something that we can address also? So if, for example, somebody changes some code in SVX, how can he know and find out very quickly whether he has to build all or he has to build only this module, for example, or to build two others? It could be much faster than to build all, even in the fastest way.
I think you're right. There's definitely the developer getting it down to 3 minutes might take years, but we're obviously going to be able to improve it faster. I think you need to separate about two builds times here. One is the complete build, which is how long does it take to make a build from scratch. And the second time is this no change build, which means how fast can you get make a small change and build it. Obviously, the total time to make a small change and build it is this time plus the time it takes to compile. Right. So because obviously the change has to be compiled in. The thing is, if you look at JAM 7 seconds for doing all the dependency checks, I don't think even if you do a huge amount of training and you're really a really, really fast writer, I don't think you can beat 7 seconds. And this is an Ansys machine. My machine gives 3 seconds for the same time. So I don't think, in this case, it's faster to go into the top and type JAM, even if you just type like JAM SC, which is the target for just building writer, which obviously means you don't build everything, you just build everything up to writer. That's faster than almost any DMA can deliver whatever combination you can make. So I don't think we can beat 3 seconds by training. If you have an idea how to do it, I think, or 7 seconds for that matter.
Does this cover all dependencies also across module? That's something we don't
yes,
have in our current
everything.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. We were very surprised by the results. Let's put it this way. It's everything.
We have been told that it is impossible to have cross-module dependencies in a real time.
7 seconds.
Okay, so if you have every dependency in your 7 seconds, then okay, my question is just obsolete.
Yeah. This is what we found interesting. I mean, that's why we did the baseline. That's why we're like, wow. Because obviously, as you said, it's very difficult to get any human to do the stuff in under 7 seconds.
If you really can do it in 7 seconds, I would even throw away my own knowledge about the modules and I think I'll never come back.
Yeah. It's like the faster my machine, as I said. So. Mike was first.
So is the methodology for doing parallel builds on the cluster different with JAM, or do you still use Ice Cream or just CC?
Okay, that's a good question. The cluster build thing is something we've been poking at only recently. Sun internally has a system to build on a heterogeneous set of platforms and build into a single tree. Obviously, we'd like that system to be in the build block. I didn't answer the second part, Matthias, how to make the cluster build useful community. We'd like the build bot to have this cluster of machines and be able to do this 20-minute builds. Because then all of the community just jump into the build bot and ask for it.
Right. The only modular is the bandwidth required to download the installs.
Yeah, well actually, yeah we're probably going to be hitting that limit. So we just need to upgrade the internet, right? But
or have distributed build bots.
Fair enough. I think Sun has solved this problem already. What we need to do is we need to take their solution, steal as much as we can, and then use it for a community version of it. We could almost steal it today. There's just some pieces we can't. I tried. They caught me at the door carrying out the pieces. But that's something definitely we want to do. We can't use Ice Cream because Ice Cream basically is just for compilation. We'd like something we can do help content in distributed way and stuff like that, and for that we need a slightly different system. This is a problem we can solve, and we already know it's been solved inside Sun. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Me? Well, I was wondering whether there is a mechanism in place to keep those two makefile systems in sync, like if I change something in makefile.
Yep. You're talking about the transition period. So the question was if there's a system to keep these two files in sync. Currently, the script could do that, and it wouldn't be too hard to make it. I mean, how I think it should work is that it should import stuff from the make files to jam files and not the other way around. So as long as we are in transition, you keep using the make files as usual, and then when the transition is over, the make files just one day disappear. That's probably the right way to do it. Again, this gets back to what you can do. You can clean up the make files in your directories, so we can make this automated. Currently, it already does that. So you can point that the whole of OpenOffice, and it churns for some minutes and spits out the transform gem files. So as long as it doesn't run into issues, meaning wacky shell scripting, it can basically resync them automatically. And the script is built so that you can include pieces that are manually done and pieces that are resynced automatically. So you can kind of you can tweak the system on the way to make it possible to do that. So yes, it's not a process I'd like the users to do, but it's definitely something that we might want to consider for the transition period. Yes.
So maybe it would be smart to make a part of the system, like having one source and enhance the script.
That's a possibility. I mean, basically writing a meta build file and then building this is actually what CMake does, right, more or less. If anyone is familiar with it's the KDE build tool nowadays. You have a common type build description, and then it spits out make files, it spits out whatever is common files, whatever. So you kind of have a meta description that's the lowest common denominator of the system, and it spits out the file. The thing is, obviously, that would mean you had to rewrite all the make files in this lowest common denominator, which is, again, the same thing as cleaning them up. So I think we can just use the existing make files to resync instead of having a separate system to do that. But yeah, I think that's a thing we need to consider. Did that answer your question? Okay? Pavel?
So what we actually need is to change gem to use make files, current make files.
Yeah, that's one thought. Obviously, the shell scripting part is something that we're not easily going to do. The problem is that the current make files don't include the namespacing information, which means we could implicitly add that. But one thing, this was something, yeah, we considered that actually, because always that would be like the holy grail of the thing. One reason I'd rather not do that is currently jam is 11 to 12,000 lines of pretty simple C code. DMake is 36,000 lines of not so simple C and whatever code. So I'd rather not start adding to the build tool because I just know, looking at DMake, I know where that path lives. So I think it's a safe choice to do the conversion but not use the make files originally. I mean, as you saw, the conversion doesn't really do much. I mean, the if statement doesn't have the point. But otherwise, it's more or less the same. So they look almost identical to the existing files anyway. So at least on the end user developer level. But that's a good idea, definitely. Did that convince you? A semi-convinced Pavel. Yes. This is really a miracle. You have to look at him now. No, honestly, yeah, sure. Anything else? If you don't do already, obviously when bigger changes come, we're going to post on the main development list. If you want to see the nitty-gritty details of how stuff works, get on tools and read the tools archives. That should give you all the measurements, how we arrived at this and so forth. Help content is actually, there's two types of complexity. There's complexity because of tools, and then because we use tools and nobody else uses, and then there's complexity because we build in different way. The build complexity, which is the shell scripts, that's real complexity we need to tackle to be able to do this well work. the fact that we use different tools, that doesn't really affect things much. If you dive into help content, actually look at what happens there, it's not too complex stuff eventually. Yeah, sure, there's a lot of targets. Yeah, sure, they have funny flags they need to be passed. And yeah, sure, there's a lot of stuff going on. But in the end, the actual build process isn't too complex. So just using tool chains that aren't used elsewhere, we need to write the rules specifically to handle these tool chains, right?
But is that easy to do?
Yes, actually, yes. So we already do that. So we can leverage a lot of that work. When I say 80% of the user make files, the developer make files are converted, obviously we can run the same tool on the pieces in Solomon Inc. that currently define the current build system. And we speed up gem files, they still need a lot of manual work to get them working, but we have a reference implementation where we work from. So if you go into gem Inc. In demo 1, which is where the converted files are, you can find settings.jam, that's a mirror of settings.mk, BNT, MSC, the target files, again, a mirror in jam. So they're basically the original make files converted into jam with a lot of tweaking on top. So we try to leverage as much of the knowledge, obviously, as the old system has, because otherwise we're just going to kill ourselves. I don't like killing myself, so that's why. I'm still alive. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? KAIB at google.com. If you want to ask something, and CC development at tools.openoffice.org. Obviously, if you have something for the build. You can always mail me, but I'm probably going to CC the response. So, down there, four of you can see. KAIB at google.com. Anything else? Okay, thank you.